Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight instead.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Session. Here we are. It's another Monday night, and we're chatting with a bunch of craft beer people today. Actually, we have two guests today. Number one, we have a brewery, Transplants Brewing. But before that, I wanted to get on Jared Veld here, who is a former NFL football player. I don't know why I said NFL football player. That's like, whatever it happens.
Yeah, I could have been like a former NFL trainer or something. Yeah, like former NFL.
Yeah, former sports guy. Yeah, here's the sports man. He's a former NFLer turned homebrewer turned craft beer lover turned podcaster. So, Jared, what's going on, man? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Before we get to everything, the podcast is called the Jared Veld Beer Podcast, which is a very clever play on your last name. I like that.
Yeah. It was almost like it was set up for it. Yeah. What rhymes with beer? Well, my last name, kind of. So
yeah, it works out, man.
Low hanging fruit there, had to take it.
Well, you know what? The thing I appreciate about it is that you basically just say that in the description of your show. It's like, you see what I did there? Really clever. And that's, I think that makes it okay.
Yes.
That makes it just fine.
Make fun of it before the other people can. Yeah. That's the major key there.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. So people have built careers off of that. Let me tell you, they're sitting in this room. Before we get started into the pod, what teams have you played for, man?
So I actually started out, I was drafted in 2010 by the Raiders. So I was out there in the Bay Area for 4 years.
Nice.
And then signed with the Cardinals, played there in Arizona for 4 years, and then a year in Denver. And then I retired and came out of retirement, played for the Packers for a little bit towards the end of the year in the playoffs 2 years ago. Retired again, and then had another former coach call me in December needing some help. So I played a little bit for the Colts last year as well.
Oh, wow. Look at you, dude. 3-time out of retirement guy.
Yeah. You never say never at this point. So
I think so, man. Is that, that's like, who's the guy that always used to threaten the retirement? Roethlisberger?
Well, no, he's like, oh, it's my last year. I don't know, man. And then he just just keep going and going and going. I guess
he's spent on like six last years.
Right, exactly right. I guess that's sort of, I don't know, you get the hunger for it, or you don't want to leave it. Or how is that retiring and then coming back? Is it harder?
Yeah, no, well, I feel like it's way better. Like, because in my head, like, I was done. Like, it was great. I was at home, you know, spending time with my family, brewing a lot of beer, just doing things that I like to do. Yeah. And I, you know, enjoy working out. So I just kept doing kind of the same stuff that I had been doing. And so I got to the point to where it was around Thanksgiving and teams, you know, needed offensive linemen. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling pretty decent and I'm in okay, you know, shape. See if anyone needs some help. So
teams need offensive linemen. I think that's, I don't really think of like professional teams just hurting for people. But apparently, hurting, maybe that's a little bit, you know.
Yeah, no, but it's a great way to put it, because you get late in the season and dude, teams are so beat up, like they literally are hurt, like they're hurting, like they're bleeding out, especially on the line position, because it's weird. You call like receivers and DBs, quarterbacks, skill players, but you teach somebody how to pass block, good luck, like that is a skill that you have to hone in on, because it's really unnatural. You know, it's not running and catching a ball; it's different.
Yeah, it is. And I think, I mean, this goes without saying, but you guys probably get the most abuse on the team just physically. I mean, you are the physical force on the team.
Yeah, definitely the most mental abuse as well. I mean, you're catching flack. You know, you're catching the first line of bullets for sure, no matter what. In the press, that doesn't matter. So you get pretty used to taking a beating all the way around.
Because it's your fault. Any loss... it's your fault.
No doubt. Yeah, any win, gotta play better.
Any win is on the quarterback, and then maybe like the wide receivers or something like that. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, look, I get it. I guess I get it. You know, it's you don't really look at it as having a lot of skill, because you just get in the way. But you're still reading lines. You're still doing all that kind of stuff. Probably trash talking everyone in line two before the snap.
Found like when it, like coming out of retirement, I was much more apt to trash talk. Like I never really talked much when during my normal playing career, but then like being done and then all of a sudden like having bonus rounds, like you know, being back out there when I thought I was never going to play again. I'm like, man, this is great. I'm going to talk some shit.
It's
like,
your extra life, dude. You know, let's go. Yeah. Hell yeah, like, dude.
Yeah. I'm going to have fun with this.
And by the third time you're just doxing everyone online, it's, I don't know, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, so tell me, man, what time did you in your career did you get started in homebrewing? Was it after you retired? It sounds like you were actively homebrewing while you were working.
So I was out. I was out in Oakland with the Raiders, and I think it was like my second year. We had the O-line gift exchange coming up, and I put a homebrew kit in, and you know, I had my eye on it. I was hoping to walk away with it, and no one else bit on it. So I took it home with me back to Michigan during the offseason, started. Brewing actually in my garage in Michigan. You know, I didn't have the nice basement brewery I have now. It's a different house, but I got started with it. You know, it was a super basic brew kit. Well, I guess it was like your brew bucket kit, brewing from extract, but it had like the kegging, the basic kegging kit as well.
Oh yeah,
that's how I was able to meet the O-line minimum for the gift exchange. But kind of fell in love with it. Nice. And, you know, it taught me a lot about beer and, you know, kind of just grew my love for all things beer from there.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So when you're on the road, are you having to like time your brews? Are you on the bus ride to the stadium? Are you like thinking about the recipes, or how into it did you get?
Yeah, it was pretty much like an off season thing. Most of the time, like as soon as the season was done, it's like, okay, it's time to brew some beer. Nice. And then there was a few times where I missed some time being hurt, and that was such a like saving grace mentally to be able to, you know, go home and brew some beer after doing, you know, some rehab treatments, that kind of stuff, just kept me sane. And then it was also nice to take away some of the pain when you have some good beer on tap.
Yeah, I'm out. My knee is I'm going to brew a Scotch ale and just kind of hang out. I mean, that is like a big part of the, you know, off the field, you know, especially in football, is that mental aspect of it. It's a hard, it's a mentally hard game. And I imagine if you've been training how long were you playing before, you know, the NFL? 15 years? Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Since I've been like fifth grade.
So okay. Yeah. So
it's been a while.
And then you stop. You can't do the thing you want to do. It's not like retirement. You're forced out because of injury or whatever. That's gotta suck. But I'm glad Beer was there.
Whenever you get dinged up and put on injured reserve, it's no good mentally because you feel like you're like, hey, I'm not out there. I'm kind of useless, letting everybody down type of thing. better go brew some beer to take my mind off this.
Well, especially if your team, you know, if you win and you're on the injured reserve, I still give my nephew played a high school ball, and I still give him shit because his team won, I don't know, state or they won a championship or something like that, but he was injured like the entire season, and I just like to rile him up about it.
Oh yeah,
it's like you're why they won.
I'm sure he really appreciates.
He really does. He's a once he gets out of the asylum, he's a well-rounded individual.
Yeah, and he has you to thank for it.
Yeah. Were you into craft beer before the homebrewing aspect of it?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, growing up in West Michigan, Bell's isn't too far away. Founders is
there you go.
About 10 minutes from my house here. And so there was definitely craft beer on the shelves, you know, at the liquor store. You know, when I was in college, you know, didn't really have quite the budget to be able to spring for, you know, a sixer of whatever, you know, wasn't like Natty Light at the time, but you know, sure. when I could get my hands on like some Oberon or you know, something else, you know, along the lines of that, like if that was like special occasion stuff,
then oh yeah,
I really enjoyed it. Like, you know, it was different sipping that beer. You know, it wasn't, you know, to warm up for a few games of beer pong. It was you know, really being present with this beer. Like, what do they put in? Like, how do they make this? And I was a biology guy in college. I went the pre-med route and all that good stuff. So,
wow.
You know, I've been in the lab and I've gone through like organic chemistry, all that stuff. So I really, you know, was curious, you know, what made this beer so different from the crap that I was, you know, always drinking. And,
sure.
You know, that curiosity kind of came to manifest a few years later.
Yeah. I like that, that comparison of, you know, you got beer pong beer and then this special occasion beer. It's like, what am I going to drink to haze everybody? It's going to be the Natty Light. But if I want to, you know, have a nice meal or have a good time or relax or whatever, you know, these other beers, you know, kind of get it. And how was finding craft beer traveling around? Did you have much time when you were traveling in the NFL to go out and do craft beers or like, I don't know, go to different breweries on an off day or something like that?
Yeah, no, it was great. You know, I've made some really good relationship with some brewers from different cities that I played in, especially when I was in Arizona and even the Bay Area. You know, I was really able to, you know, get some good relationships with different people in the industry. And there was a guy on our team in Arizona, and he was like the go-to find the best craft beer in the city that we were playing.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was able to be nice. I could be super lazy. Like, I knew that Earl was going to bring back a haul of just gems. And as soon as we got on the bus after that game, win or loss, he was going to have some great stuff to crack open.
Oh, that's good. Earl's a champ, sounds like.
Dude, yeah. Earl's a good guy. Shout out to Earl if you're listening. Appreciate you.
Yeah, more than you know, man. So when you're done and you're retired now for the third time, it sounds like, why podcasting? What drew you to that?
Yeah. So great question. You know, I got a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, you know, I work in a school kitchen making lunch every day for the school.
Nice.
And, just through all, you know, my daily life, it's hard to like talk to anybody about beer. And, you know, I really like beer. I have a love for beer, and there's no one to really talk to about it. And so, you know, I enjoy talking to, you know, people who have really had success in the craft beer world. And then on top of that, you know, talking to people that are doing it at a high level, it's, you know, on some level inspirational for me. Just, you know, it's like, hi, will you do a TED talk for me on my show on how you've been able to make it in an industry where it's, you know, very hard to solidify yourself as, you know, some world-class brewer. So it's really cool. It's, you know, it's an honor being able to talk to those guys. And, you know, some of them send some beer my way that I'm able to crack open and enjoy during that show. And it's just kind of a nice, you know, beer fellowship moment that I don't get anywhere else. So selfishly for me, it's great. It scratches that itch. And then, you know, at the same time, I'm able to, you know, record that conversation and throw it out there. I mean, this is, I feel like it's so easy. If you know, we've gone through one thing during the pandemic, it's like, well, you can pretty much get on front of a screen, talk to anybody, record it, and throw it out there. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you know, finding people is easy too, because, you know, the craft beer, and of course, you know, we mean easy as in like there's a lot of access.
Yes, craft, there's access.
Correct. Because it's very hard at the same time. But craft beer people are really excited to talk about what they're doing, and not only just, you know, for self-promotion, which there is a lot of that, but it is also, we're really passionate about this project. And I think that's what sort of turns people sour when like big beers or, you know, larger craft breweries sell to other, you know, mm-hmm. AB or whatever. It's like, oh, but I bought into the craft beer dream with you. You know what I mean? But building that and, you know, figuring out how to survive, especially through COVID, especially now. That's a perfect topics to talk about on a show, because, you know, you won't get that anywhere else unless you live through it and then survive enough to tell someone else about it.
Right. It's a cool thing.
Yeah. Is there one piece of advice that you've learned maybe from your last shows? You've done, what, about 9 shows, 10 shows, something like that?
Yeah. I think we have 10 out, and I think we've done like 16 total.
Oh, wow. Okay. You got some on the back burner.
Yeah. Love it. We got some in the barrel.
Nice.
You know, things that I've learned, there's the people who I've talked to who are doing it at really the highest level and have had a lot of success that have been around, you know, for more than a couple of years.
Yeah.
Are some of the most, you know, passionate people still involved. You know, they don't seem like they're getting bored with it. And then you can see on the other end of the spectrum, you know, there's been a couple times where, you know, it's been some big breweries, but you can kind of tell that it's kind of, you know, for the founder of the brewery and it is pretty much, you know, the founder, you know, they're stepping down, they're decreasing their role, the enthusiasm is quite not as, and it's just stark, you know, and it just becomes apparent within like the first 2 minutes of talking to them. But you know, it's awesome. It's hard for me not to talk about, I feel like we're talking about hops and lagers. Hops and lagers dominate conversation. Like,
yeah, and they should.
You know, I want to hear about the hops, and brewers love lagers.
Yeah.
Brewers love talking about lagers, because it's like, you know, it's the quest to brew the perfect, gentle, nuanced beer that is, you know, one of the most difficult styles to brew. You know, a lot of people don't know that haven't brewed. And, you know, a brewer, it's so funny talking to all these brewers, you know, brewers don't want to sit back and have a bunch of 9% IPAs all the time. Mm. You know, they like good hops. They like good hoppy beers. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's something that goes down smooth and, you know, has been really, really skillfully crafted, because those are difficult beers to do. Those are kind of my two biggest takeaways.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense, man. That makes sense. Well, that's cool, man. You can get on Apple Podcasts, the Jared Veldbeer podcast. It sounds like you have some more eps coming out, and that'll be good, man. I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Jared, keep homebrewing, man. Don't stop. Looks like you got a great setup back there. You can't afford to stop. You said you know, you have another basement. You have a brewing basement, a true dedicated space. Not many people have it, so use the hell out of it for all of us.
Yes. No. And as a quick little quip,
yeah.
I always laugh because, you know, one of my first homebrew shops that I went to, and I still buy from them online, is More Beer.
There you go.
Those guys are great. Nice. I know you guys love More Beer.
Yes.
Love More Beer. And, you know, I've thought that that's a little bit of a spot that, we can, you know, kind of overlap in our Venn diagram of beer worlds.
Absolutely, man. More Beer is the greatest. Absolutely everything you need. Go to morebeer.com today.
Right now.
Yeah, right
deal
now.
Of the day. What's the deal of the day at More Beer right now? Probably something good.
Man, you know, the best part, one of the best parts of working there when we started the deal of the day is loading that thing up for like the week. It's just fun. I don't know. You know, as a home brewer, you're like, oh, what can I sort of help other people sort of get into? Yeah, it was a good time. Anyway, Jared, thanks a lot, man. We'll let you split.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, hang on. Let me take a quick break, and I'll say a proper goodbye. Hang on, everyone. It's the session. We're going to be right back with Transplants Brewing Company, the Antelope Valley, California. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Beer. It's time to talk beer and chew bubble gum.
And we're all out of gum.
The session.
All right. Thanks for hanging on, everybody. We are here with today's guest, Transplants Brewing Company. We have Sarah and Matt on the phone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Thanks for the beer. We got a bunch of crowlers and a couple bottles, which I'm always very excited about. But more importantly, there's a pale ale staring at me. So I'm going to go ahead and open the pale ale, but why don't you guys tell me a little bit about how you got into homebrewing? Because you were homebrewers first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the first place, I guess we just, it was something we found as like a married couple's activity to do together, which I guess
I love.
It was a good connection we could have. And it seemed to be the opposite of the way a lot of other people work, where it's like, oh, my wife won't let me buy the brewing stuff. We got to do other things.
Yeah, dude. Or I'm like hiding from my family in the garage for 6 hours. It's daddy's time.
Meanwhile, back when I had like, you know, a different job, she'd like text me at work and be like, I found a Coke fridge. I don't know how I'm going to get it over to our place. We'll figure it out. We'll pay for it. Like she'd find weird upgrades and stuff and always be thinking of ideas and innovating. So we just kind of, I don't know.
It's kind of went with
it. At some point, our artist, Brandon Singleton, he did a logo for us. And a lot of people just kind of assumed that we were starting a brewery at that point, cause it looked pretty legit, I guess. And we came up with the right people at the right time. Like we didn't really set out to do that. We were just drinking.
That's funny. Cause you know, a lot of homebrewers will have a logo or at least their name stylized in a certain way. Or whatever, you know, to put on labels. But people, it sounds like they took the quality of your homebrew along with that, you know, sort of red flag. Like, oh, maybe they're opening a brewery and they don't want to say anything or whatever. I feel like it's a good compliment is, I guess, what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just kind of went with it, you know. And here we are.
Are you guys opening a brewery? Yes. Probably, maybe. How long had you been homebrewing until that point where you were actually really starting to talk about opening a brewery?
We brewed in our kitchen for the first time in summer of 2012 and had a lease on our current place that we're at in fall of 2014.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why we're don't do that. That's crazy. Yeah. Don't do that.
That's crazy.
Because we were brewing every weekend. We did it as much as we could, and we were really into it. But that was insane, and I don't know how we got here. But it's been fun.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, I hope so. But also, that's wild that it's been fun. Because, I mean, those are stories that you hear about in like the late 90s, where people go, "Oh yeah, I brewed a few, and I'm going to open a brewery." And it's always like, "Why? That's very dangerous to do." And back then, when there weren't a whole lot of breweries, but now there's a ton, and you still did it. And it, I mean, obviously, it's a success. You're still going. You're expanding. You're doing a whole bunch of cool stuff that we want to get to.
And I didn't even really believe it would happen for a while. Sarah and our other business partner, we're half of the ownership here.
Okay.
And Corey Cordovano and Jim Kazar are other two owners here. And Sarah and Corey really kind of took the lead with like finding a place and figuring out how all the things were going to happen. I didn't believe it for the longest time. And I'm like, wow, we're actually...
Yeah.
That you okay. had a place.
Yeah. It was pretty scary.
I can imagine. I mean, especially because you're probably going, keys? Oh, I need an alarm code? Like, what is happening right now? I haven't been brewing that long. That's got to throw you. So how long until you were actually open? What was that time frame like?
It took us like a year and a half. So it was like January of 2016 that we finally got open. So it's been almost 6 years now.
Wow. Okay, and you guys are in Palmdale, California.
Yes.
Which is right outside Lancaster. We have a couple friends in Lancaster. Actually, Bravery is going to be on the show next week.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. Yeah.
They helped us get open in the first place.
Excellent. So. Nice. Yeah, that's very cool. I like that spot. How is the Antelope Valley as far as craft beer scene? I mean, I know there's a couple breweries now. Are people still sort of, broadening their horizons as far as beer? Or is it like a hardened beer culture that just... is now finally getting some breweries to support it. Does that make sense?
No, I think everyone's interested in beer up here. We kind of draw outside the lines a little bit. So we're always trying to offer people something different. Like we're always trying to do what everyone isn't doing. So I feel like when people are looking for something new, that's always something we want to be able to answer.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I like that very much. What kind of system do you guys have? What size system you run in?
It's a 10 barrel system.
10 barrels.
We have 10 barrel fermenters and 2 brights.
Okay. Very good. That's a reasonable size.
Yeah.
Were you concerned that maybe it was too big? I mean, that would be my concern opening a brewery, you know, having gone from stovetop to brewing platform, going, this is a lot of beer. How did you figure out that that was the right size for you? Or was it that? I mean,
we got as much as we could afford.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, realistically, though.
Okay. So there wasn't really, like, in my mind, I go, there's math involved. There's a calculation. But it sounds like you just were like, the checkbook says this, and we can do this now.
We did as big as we could. I mean, we knew that, like, the numbers in doing like three or even seven, like, wasn't enough to kind of make it work. But we figured with 10, we can make it work. But now we're at the point where we're kind of crunched, where we need to up things. Figure it out, solve some problems. So another interesting that's happened too, like, we just started doing live concerts here like 6 months ago. So
I mean, we both still
help out with stuff, but we've actually been able to step away and have someone else lead our brew house. So Anthony Balladeras is now our head brewer. And that's kind of an interesting story, because when we first got the space next door, which we were originally using for an event space, we hired him to clean the floors. And he always found extra stuff to do or a better way to do things. And we clicked to the point where he wanted to learn everything, and he did. And now he knows how, he learned from the bottom up here and brews all the beer, and it's delicious.
Wow. Yeah. So I noticed that you have a, that you have an event space, because along with all the beer you sent and the cool stickers, and which we'll get to all that, there's a flyer with like past shows that you guys have had. You had Agent Orange play at your brewery.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That is fucking, I mean, I saw them back in like 2001 or something like that. And it was just the raddest show. You had the Loonies, for God's sakes. That was just recently, I think, right? Or is Loonies that, no, that's Friday. That's Friday, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, things escalated quickly with that. We've always wanted to do the live music thing. I met my the artist that did our logo, because he was originally doing posters for my band. So we've always wanted to do music stuff. But I don't know. There's a gap of places to do live music between like LA and Vegas or Fresno or whatever. And anyone around here, all it is like cover bands and stuff like that. And, you know, we've got these original crazy beers. We've got this original crazy artwork here, and we need some original crazy music. We can't just have cover bands here. So I pissed some people off with that one, because it's like, no, we're just not doing it. Mm-hmm. And someone wants to put a cover in their set, that's great. But
that's fine. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, how do you go from like Agent Orange to Loonies? I mean, I feel like that's such a broad flavor spectrum, right? I mean, you can sort of apply it to beer, but I guess, I mean, what am I trying to say? How do you know what the locals are going to be into, or do you care? You're just doing
those,
it.
Some of the shows, like we have a booking manager that's helping us out here.
Okay.
Sucker Punch Productions. His name is Jaime Contreras. And both of those shows, Agent Orange and Loonies, he brought here. He's the expert on like old school punk and hip hop, and has been doing the stuff around here for a while. So just to be able to partner with someone and help uplift the music scene around here, or just, you know, be the place that cares and really, you know, wants to make things better. Like, it's been great to connect and be able to work on these things together. And
I mean, you had Reagan Youth on a Tuesday. Like, what the fuck is going on, dude? This is like my entire like teenage years just, you know, sort of rolled into a brewery space.
And well, and there's a few that just got announced too. Like next year, Get Dead and Seshi's coming, and Rattle Essence and Lewis Idol. I think that's all that's out there so far.
What a weird,
but that's on the punk front. Yeah.
But again, it's sort of a weird assemblage of styles. But I guess for a true music venue, you have to be. You're not just. It's rare that you're going to find like we're just a punk club, or we're just a metal club, or we're just a hip hop club. You gotta be everything to everybody on that front. You can't really be everything to everybody on the beer front necessarily, but you can try real hard. You know what I mean? There's not that many places that you can just go, I'm focused on one thing only.
In both cases, you got to have something for everyone. I mean, we can't just have the same show like every night of the week, because that crowd's going to be burnt out, and we're not going to have the same drinkers in here all the time.
Yeah.
So for us, though, I mean, the kind of music that we've brought that we really enjoy, it's, I don't know, stoner rock, space rock. To that end, we actually brought Stoner, which is like half of Caius, like Alan Johannes from Queens of the Stone Age and 11. He was here. Spirit in the Room was great. This past week, Mike Dillon and Punkadelic was here. Shiner's coming. Those are all the bands that we listen to. And it's crazy to like have listened to artists for like 2-3 decades. And I send them a message on Instagram. They're like, sure, I'll come. I don't get it.
Yeah, man. Like on my other side, on my, my Disney podcast, which is Ears Up podcast.com. I got a message from someone representing Josh Freese. From like the Vandals shit. And it, apparently his dad was one of the longtime band leaders at the Disneyland band. And he's like a big Disneyland head. So I'm trying to book him. And I had the same experience. I was telling this lady, I was like, I don't really know what to do with myself right now. Cause I just want to talk to him about music, but I don't think anybody else is going to care. It's a trip. As we age, everyone ages with us. And I didn't really think that happened. You know, I just think of Josh Freese is like the 20-year-old in the Vandals. It's a trip.
Yes. Interrelated to beer. I mean, it's been interesting running a venue and having beer too, because it's really pushing us to do lower gravity stuff. Like even having 7 or 8% IPA in here is just ridiculous. Like we're just going sessionable stuff. And the number one thing is just less than 5% lager that we have here, just because everyone wants basic beer. So now we're trying to like, cool, let's have a Mexican lager and a Hef and a wit and just try to push all sorts of stuff like lower.
That is really interesting. Yeah. That's cool. It's a cool driver, I think, because a lot of times you would probably go, well, what does the crowd want? What do the customers want? We got to try to blend this thing. But the music venue, I imagine that people are pretty much, focused on lower ABV beers that you can have a couple and still be able to drive home after a show. It's different than sitting down and tasting craft beer.
Yeah. We want them to be standing for 3-4 bands and be able to still get another beer.
Are people still like running pits and stuff in your place, or is there like a no pit, no moshing policy?
For Agent Orange and Casualties, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's been a really cool culture where everyone watches out for each other.
Yeah,
there's even been like we're all ages, so it's like people bring their kids in the mosh pit. And we try to make it so people can't climb up the stairs and dive off the stage. So I guess that keeps, the young, the old, or the out of shape off of, which shouldn't be diving. But anyone else just climbs up the front. And it's like, at a certain point, I give up. I mean, someone was saying online, like, I think everyone at the Casualty show jumped off the stage. And I'm like, yeah, probably. I don't even know what to do.
They caught him, though.
They caught him. It was fine.
Just lemmings. Just keep going over, man. Uh-huh, just see him fly off. That's cool. Yeah. And the fact that it's all ages, that's really great too. Like I want to bring my kid to like Gilman, and see a show at one point just to like relive my youth with her, but she'll probably hate it. But it's nice that you have a space that parents can do that. Anyway, absolutely. I don't know. I like this pale ale, man. Tell me about Patches, a pale ale, please.
Well, it's just, we just kind of made a classic pale ale. But the name is after, we have a brew cat that we got this summer.
Nice.
Her name is Patches. She's beautiful and everybody loves her.
Of course.
And we wanted to name a beer after her. We were already coming up like, well, we want to do a pale ale. Mm-hmm. And why not Patches pale ale, and it's kind of her color a little bit too.
I could talk to the beer concept a little bit though.
Yeah.
What I was going for on this is what I drink all the time now. I needed something hoppy that I could, drink a bunch of and, still have a little backbone, more backbone than normal to it.
Yeah.
I was trying to do something halfway between Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and Russian River Road to Hill 56. So it's like Simcoe Cascade. I think there's a bag of C30 and a half a bag of brew malt in here, which is the little bit of color.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I think it's just like Great Western Superior Pilsen.
Oh, really? Pilsner malt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, let me check really quick.
Yeah, do it, because if you're wrong, Matt, I swear to God, everyone's
probably going to be wrong, but I got it in front of me. Oh, no, we use 2-row in that one.
It's, okay, yeah. See?
It's only Great Western 2-row.
You're off. Sarah and I are talking from now on. You can't, at first I was like, well, with all the music stuff, I wonder if Patches was like a Deadbolt reference. I don't know if you know the Deadbolt band, but.
I asked them to play here. I want them here.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I hit up Deadbolt.
Fucking love that band so much. Okay, this is too much. Patches, it's funny because you were mentioning it's sort of like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and Road to Hill 56 or whatever. And as you're right before you're saying that, I'm going, this is very Sierra Nevada Pale Ale esque, but the hop bitterness is a little wider in flavor range, and a little more floral, all semi-tropical, I guess, but not really. You know, I don't know. But the body is definitely there. You have a really good body, and I like this new wave of like old school IPA or old school pale ales. I think pales are starting to like come back from the single malt, you know, only two row and a bunch of overly used hops or a bunch of, you know, high alpha hops or just load it with bitterness. They're coming back, I think, to like this sort of, let's put some crystal malt back in a pale ale, for God's sakes. I like this beer a lot. It's a lot of good mouthfeel to it. Very, very robust, I guess. But that bitterness is there, and the way you're doing the hops is great. The hop flavor is awesome. This is great.
Cheers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cheers. Yeah, I like that a lot. And it's 4.5%.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that. I love it even more now. A sub 5% pale. See, I think that's what more people need to be doing, to be honest with you. I like a pale ale lower. I could drink this all day. Now I know why you're drinking it all the time. And you sent the Crowlers, showing up the Crowler can art. I love the labels, man. And you guys sent some stickers. My kid loves the stickers. Hopefully she's not putting them on things that she's not supposed to. But do you have little stories behind these little characters, or are they just kind of funky?
Some of them are funky from things. Different beers, but it's just the imagination of Brandon.
Yeah, it just came out of Brandon's brain.
Okay. All right.
they're in there.
It's sort we of like don't generally approach it like we have to do a certain kind. Like we all come up with the concepts together. We mm-hmm. won't do a beer a certain way unless we can get the art right for it too, or it mm-hmm. makes sense for him. But he's always just kind of, he draws what he wants and it works out.
What do you mean when you said you won't do a beer if the art isn't right for it?
Well, like he's our art director and he's here all the time, like leading all sorts of projects and everything we do with mm-hmm. this. So everything has to hit for the beer. Like we can't just pick some random name that doesn't work with how he's going to design the logo for it. Like we have creatures. See. Every single one of our beers has some kind of creature that represents it. So that's a big consideration that it has to fit that aesthetic or make sense for how we can create something to go with it.
I get it. Okay. So you're not going to like ever, you know, I have a name for a beer called like, you know, Tractor Ale or whatever. And it's like, well, how am I going to do that? How am I going to fit the artwork on that? We can't do that. We got to rename it or do something else.
Yeah. It's more the opposite of that.
Oh, okay.
But okay. I can give an example. Like, we even intentionally kind of did it once where we just made a beer that didn't have a name, and we're kind of trying to do like a reaction beer, like last minute, like South Park.
Okay.
You know,
where a beer like in 7 days.
Where it's like, this week something happened. So yeah. We did it during election week.
Okay.
And then called it like a day early and made a beer with a orange monster throwing a temper tantrum and called it Sore Loser.
Yeah.
So then, you know, our town's really kind of split. So a lot of people were just like, getting all worked up about it. We're like, what? What do we do? And then the thread. We just let the thread go and just, you know, ate popcorns.
I love it, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought this was America. You just post that Randy gif all day long. So you intentionally sort of let that, I mean, some people will call that bad press, quote unquote, to just have this sort of like shitstorm going on their social, but you just hung out.
I don't know how to explain that about us, but yeah, that's fine. Like I've never,
yeah, Sarah's really laughing. Away. So yeah,
we've never shied away from diving headfirst with our business account into whatever. Like I don't have a different personal, like an Instagram. We just have the business one. So
okay,
it gets some mileage sometimes.
Yeah, you seen some drama? Have you caused some drama? I don't
know. We try to embrace some of that stuff too, like where people just got bent out of shape for the wrong reason, like. What was it? We posted a review once that someone had that said that we have like satanic pedo art and that we have some like secret tunnel that goes to
Skunk Works
over here. And that we're like some like huge conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. Like, let's push that. Like, sure. Believe that. That's true.
Very QAnon. Yeah. That's, I wonder when like the QAnon and the craft beer world will intersect. And apparently it's already happened. That's that very much like the tunnel, like, yeah, Pizzagate kind of thing. That's weird, man. People
where's,
are weird.
Where's Beer Blog when we need him?
Where did he go? He left. He abandoned us all.
He did.
He's our buddy. We made some beers with him. I miss him dearly from doing what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so he's still around. Everything's fine. He just doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beer was on, you know, beer. The beer thing is what it is. And
Well, tell him I call him a coward. How about that?
Okay. We'll I certainly will. We all want him back.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah, the pale ale is great. Oh, actually, before we move on to the next one, tell me about the name Transplants.
Well, we're originally from Chicago, so we're Transplants. And so as our other business partners are from New York. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's also the character who we call Elvis. It's like cutting his brain open. So he's doing a brain transplant.
Okay.
And then also plants. Because hops, you know, all that. I don't know if I explained that right. So it's got a few meanings.
Did you just come up with it and figure out what else to add to it? Or is it really that?
Basically, like we came up with the name and then told Brandon that we wanted something really cool. Like, I don't know if we maybe gave him a few like this and that, but he just kind of came out, and there it was. It was, oh, yeah, that's perfect.
That's so good that you're able to hook up with someone who can kind of get your sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. It's that, I feel like it's hard to find in the, in any space really, but, the people who do, man, the artwork that comes out of that, you know, especially the collab between, art and beer is very, I don't say volatile, but it's very, conducive. It's very, charged. It's very, I don't want to say poetic because I think that's stupid, but it's also, I don't know. It's neat. I mean, look at this. It's, what does this say? It's blue raspberry hard seltzer, unrooted. That's just a rad ass label. And I don't know that you could get that, you know, separate from being in a craft beer space. Does that make sense? Have you seen what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's to relate it to the music out thing. It's kind of like, you know, sakes, you see a cool album cover and it draws you in. But the way, yeah, Brandon's always put it, he's like, I can sell the first beer, but then you got to sell the rest of them.
Yeah, it's true. You have to sell a second one. Absolutely. Yeah. all right. The next crowler I popped open is the blue raspberry hard seltzer, 5.5%. And it is blue. Windex blue. Tell me about the hard seltzer. How's hard seltzer going for you guys?
Really good. Okay. We try to, with the exception of probably that one, since there's no such thing as a blue raspberry. we try to use natural stuff in them and not, we don't use like, just like some clear flavoring, like a lot of places use. We try to have it be from a real thing. So like me and a friend, helped me out juicing a bunch of Meyer lemons this morning. And, we're going to use that. A friend gave me a bunch of guavas, going to use that, pomegranates, you know, just spent all this time processing it and putting it in seltzers. So it makes it more of like it's almost more like a soda almost with juices in it and stuff. So, I tried a lot of different seltzers and I feel like ours is a little bit more what people are looking for.
I haven't had too many hard seltzers before, but yours definitely tastes more like a juice, not like a soda where it's like a little, you know, maybe on, I think soda, like on the sweet side or whatever, but it is, mm-hmm, it is juice like a little, yeah, lightly carbonated. And I don't know if it's just cause it's from the crowler or whatever, but the carbonation isn't super heavy. If you can define carbonation as heavy, that was pretty stupid. I'll edit that out. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. No one will ever know about the mistake. But it sort of lets the flavor hang out on my palate a little bit more,
mm-hmm,
you know, get some of that, maybe the acidic from the carbonic acid or whatever, but the flavor is very, very good. It does taste like a juice, like a lightly flavored juice. I like it.
Yeah, and we usually, when we do a 10-barrel batch, we split it 3 to 4 different ways. So, like, we do a base, basically a blank base, and then, yeah, we add directly to the kegs whatever juices, and then rack on top of that. So that gives us more variety with one batch, basically.
Okay, that's smart. That's a smart way to do it. Do you have smaller fermenters that you...
No.
Okay.
No.
No. Her and Anthony have developed a process they call flavor blasting.
Okay.
So we have a bunch of just like brewery parts and clamps and stuff that can hold liquid. And they basically, they get all their stuff done in like, you know, food safe containers, like big containers and, mm-hmm, stuff. And then they pour it into the chamber, yeah, and then they close the valve and then just like CO2 injected in the kegs. And then we just keg on top of it. And okay. I overestimate the ABV on it. So we know we're diluting it.
Sure.
So probably okay. 6% when it's actually like pure.
So you flavor in the keg.
Yes.
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
We also flavor in the slushy tank.
Oh yeah. That's
we started doing beer slushies.
That was popular when it was hot. Not as much now.
Right.
It's really cold up in night up here.
Yeah. But, you guys get very cold and then also very hot.
Yes.
Yeah. I have some friends in Lancaster and it's like, it's either 115 or it's going to snow. Like that's wild. Yeah. Sometimes in the same day, it feels like. Slushies. People are still rocking your slushies.
Yeah, maybe we're a little bit late to the game. I think LAL Works was doing it a while ago. But I mean, hella, one weekend in, it was like, okay, well, that paid for itself already.
Wow,
love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's what you got to do, man. If you can be a destination for people and give everybody at least one thing, I think that's all you can do.
That's what some of this stuff has done too. Like, especially the seltzers have done that. You know, you get a group of people, there's always like, I don't know, someone in the group that wants something different, or I don't know, sometimes gluten's a concern. It's not like we're saying they're gluten free, but they're reduced.
Reduced.
It's on the same equipment.
But. Yeah. Seltzers or just beers in general?
No, the seltzers.
The seltzers,
I wouldn't dare to call them gluten free just because it's. There's gluten in the air here, but
because they're on
the place isn't gluten free.
They're on the same equipment. Okay, guys, see what you're saying. All right, yeah. Well, hopefully, no one's as allergic to walk in and then suddenly there's gluten in the air.
If they are, I wouldn't recommend coming.
I mean, that's on you at that point, I guess. Yeah. Everybody, this is really good. I could definitely see this as a slushy or even like a snow cone. We kind of make sort of the same thing, I guess. Yeah, but you know what? And it goes back to the flavor of it. It's such a rich flavor. It's such a very focused flavor. You wouldn't know that it's alcoholic. You wouldn't know that it's 5.5%. I wouldn't. I mean, I would assume, but you know, it tastes very good. I'm sure this is a danger for some people.
Yeah, you can't really tell on those. You can kick them back.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the draw. I mean, I've heard that seltzers are sort of like declining in popularity. Do you guys see that, or is it just maybe an anomalous thing?
It's probably a little less popular as the weather cools a little bit. People maybe go towards more of the pale ales and IPAs and stuff, but we can't even keep up with it in the summer. Wow. But it's still very steady though.
Okay. So you're processing a ton of fruit in the summer?
I have, especially lately. People have been like, I have all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, we have like friends and neighbors and stuff like that offer us their yards of fruit, which is a really cool thing. So jeez. Anyone that's offering us fruit, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let me take another break. I want to get a bunch more beers in here. I'm going to talk a little bit about your Indiegogo campaign. I was looking at that. I think that was a really cool thing you guys did. And then a little bit about some of the drama that's been surrounding you guys a little bit, especially with COVID and all that kind of fun stuff. You know, the good informational stuff that everyone loves talking about, the lighthearted, nonsense. So hang on just a second, and everyone go get yourself some beers. I'm going to go do that for myself as well, and we'll be right back with Transplants Brewing here on The Session. Hang tight.
Tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, thanks for hanging on, everybody. We're back with Matt and Sarah from Transplants Brewing in Palmdale, California. And I have three crowlers in front of me, and I'm going to drink them all to the end. No, I'm kidding. We got an IPA, we got another IPA, and then we have a sweet potato ale, and I'm looking forward to honestly each and every one of them. What should I start with first? Should I start with the
those three. Start with the sweet potato.
The sweet potato? Really? Okay. It's called the Ocarina of Time, but it's Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
But it's like the herb, THYME. Now, Aside from not being able to pronounce it very well, I've played that game, that Zelda game, and I laughed very hard, and I sent a picture of your can to my nerd friends online, and they all laughed as well, too. I think it's a pretty cool play on words. Ocarina of Time. I always pronounce it as Ocarina of Time, and I like, you know, played the game, got the book even, too, back then when video games, you know, you could buy a companion book to, like, help you out. Sweet potato ale with nutmeg and thyme. Tell me a little bit about this beer, please.
It's our answer to pumpkin beers because we don't want to do a pumpkin beer. So we did a sweet potato beer instead. Okay. So it's actually sweet potatoes in the mash. It's supposed to be kind of like sweet potato pie.
Yeah.
So it's got nutmeg and lemon thyme. And
so there's some cinnamon and marshmallow.
That aroma is great. It's citrusy and that caramelized sugar immediately comes. It's almost just like brown sugar and like a lemony thing, almost like a lemongrass, I guess. But it's the thyme, nutmeg. Yeah, I could get that.
The farmer tells us that the sweet potato mash days are really popular with the pigs.
So you, farmer comes and picks up your mash. And yeah. These are the ones that the pigs go. Do they go hog wild? I'm a jokester, guys. Yeah, this smells great. It smells like a pumpkin beer, in the sense that it's, you know, spiced, but that sort of, you know, pumpkin beers to me sort of have that that brown sugar, like light brown sugar note that sort of runs through them all. I like pumpkin beers. I think I'm the only one. I don't know if I've had a sweet potato beer, especially not with nutmeg and thyme, but I'm about to, and I'm kind of excited about it. As much for good radio it makes. Oh, that's good. Wow, that's very different than how it smells, too. That is a flavorful beer. I'm actually broken for a second because like, like the flavors are sort of, they're sort of like Juddy outy where I don't know. I'm tasting in shapes right now. I don't know why. It's a very, but like I get a shape that sort of curves at the bottom. I get a shape that pokes out at the left here. And it's very like expansive. The flavors on this beer are very expansive. How do you add the spices?
I just add them after fermentation, basically. The sweet potatoes is in the mash, so that part's already
That's
done.
Easy. Yeah.
And I grind the nutmeg and all that and try to keep like the spices really fresh.
You grind the nutmeg yourself?
Yes.
How many nutmegs are you grinding for a 10-barrel batch?
Let me see this last time, maybe like about a quarter pound, which
that's not a lot, but it sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Well, I ended up like figuring out, like I got one, a grinder, like that you can go like that with, and, it broke and then I attached it to a power drill. So
hell yes. Absolutely.
That made it really easy.
Yeah. Homebrewers.
It was hard before that. And it's just like painstaking.
Yeah.
But it makes a big difference if you buy it pre-ground versus grinding it.
Sure.
So much brighter.
That's the homebrewer, you know, logic, homebrewer intuition, where you're just like, I can power this. I can motorize this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you really get that amount of nutmeg in the aroma. Like, I mean, that amount. Like, I can know exactly how much, but
it, I mean, relative to the amount of beer, it's not a lot of spice, but that's a strong spice, so,
yes,
know.
Nutmeg really comes through, but yeah, that is like, I'll just, you know, if I smell on the side of the glass, I can really get it. And I guess this is the time of year where you just more experience with nutmeg. I like this beer a lot. It's very different than a pumpkin ale. It does share a lot of the aromatics, like I said, but the flavor's not there. It's very much lighter than a pumpkin beer would be. There is like a lemony citrus thing happening, but I don't know if it's because you said lemon thyme. And then I go, well, it must be this thing. Do you treat your water at all for a beer like this?
No.
Just same water all the time?
Yeah. I mean, it's filtered, but other than that, I mean, it's like.
Yeah, I just didn't know, like, with all that starch from the sweet potato and, you know, you have, you know, the spices, I didn't know if you would soften it or harden it or whatever to maybe overcompensate for a thing, because not that it needs it, but I didn't know if you built it that way or anything.
We didn't do anything different. We used just standard water from here.
Yeah.
Didn't.
Have you done this beer before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the second batch from this year that we sent you.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you've done
over pretty well.
Nice. Okay. Is this the first year you've done it, though?
No.
This is
I think the third or fourth year we've done it. It's a really strong seasonal for us. Like people come and ask.
People look
for
forward
one.
To it.
Really, cool. You cook with it at all? Imagine you could do some good stuff with this.
I'm sure you could. Like I haven't, but yeah, that would be really good for a lot of different dishes. Well, I would imagine.
Yeah,
it's interesting. She actually cooks the potatoes using our old homebrew setup. So we don't really use those old like kettles anymore. So yeah. She does it the day before and then just leaves it sit till the next day. And then we just, put it in buckets and throw it in while we're stirring.
Well, it sounds like Sarah does everything. It sounds like she does all the ingredient additions. She does everything. Well, what do you do?
I add the weird stuff.
You add the weird. Are you the weird stuff person? Is that your?
Yeah.
That's your.
That's what I do.
Well, her magic ability is to know just the right amount. She's one of those chefs that's like, well, how much you put in? That much.
I mean, I write it down with the brewing, but like I might next time just be like, nah, I'm going to put more in, whatever. Just change it.
Whenever we're trying out wild new things like this too, we always do it on a big batch like this. So she's always able to kind of dial it in and figure it out. Just if it's the first time out, we'll go a little bit lighter on the flavors because you can always add more. You can't take it away.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Which is a very big home brewing lesson. It's like one of the first things you learn as a home brewer, I think, when you start going off script and doing your own recipes, like let's back off on this a little bit. All right. Well, look, I like that beer. I think that's great. It is a very good answer and a very good alternative to pumpkin beer. So if you guys are in the area and you don't like pumpkin beers, but you still want a seasonal, stop in and catch yourself a crowler. Are you guys packaging besides crowlers? You have like cans and bottles and stuff like that. I mean, I have two bottles in the fridge, but
we do 500 milliliter bottles.
Okay. Of all your offerings?
Of select ones. It's,
okay.
Not all of them, but the ones we've done before
So you don't like can your pale ale for distribution regionally or anything like that?
No. And actually with the venue, things have, distro's kind of like on a request basis right now because we can't really keep up with beer anyhow. So
nice.
I need to be able to make more beer so we can sustain that too. But right now it's kind of like sell more beer here, which works anyhow because the more beer we can sell here, the better we do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about, what everyone talks about on the show because I make them is COVID. You guys were pretty well established. We've talked to some breweries who opened like a month before COVID hit and, they made it and, the established breweries, definitely had a hard time as well. But the crunch that you guys, I would imagine, fell into was all of the lockdown restrictions.
Yes. Especially LA County.
Especially LA County. You guys went head to head with LA County. Can you talk to me a little bit about what prompted that?
Well, basically, the county was treating restaurants differently than breweries. And it's just not fair that if there's a behavior that's unsafe, let's treat that and have it be the same across the board. Mm-hmm. Seems the crux of it came down to the fact that our kitchen's outside with the food truck and not inside with us. And somehow disadvantaging two businesses is better. The first thing they were doing, they let restaurants be outside for service and we could only be to go. And they had that going for a while. In the past, before all this, there was other stuff that happened where like our brewery in the city of Lancaster were not exactly good.
Okay.
The mayor of Lancaster is Rex Paris. And in the middle of us being treated like this, like Paris Law Firm actually came to us and offered to help and change things. And given the way the history was, they really didn't have to do that. But those guys are awesome. And now we're friends and everything. And great.
So
they changed things three times for us. The first time was for being able to serve outside like restaurants. Then later on, they tried to make it so we had to have reservations to get in here.
Yes.
Like a day in advance. They got that changed in like a week. And then this last spring, if you wanted to have a beer here, it had to be outside in the parking lot with food from a food truck, but you could go get the same beer that I made over at Yard House down the street inside with no restrictions. So it's like,
this
doesn't make any sense. So then they got changed. That changed in a week too.
Wow. So the mayor of Lancaster, he has a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Wow. And so
it's actually his son, Cale, and Dan that really helped us out a bunch on this case.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. How come you guys were at odds with the city of Lancaster? Because it's a different city. Is it somehow like run by the same governing body?
Yeah. Well, there's always been a little bit of thing between Palmdale and Lancaster. But okay. I guess the way that got set off is there was the notion of a restriction of single-serve bottles in liquor stores in Lancaster in the name of stopping homelessness. And that didn't make any sense because it's not like homeless people are going to buy craft beer. It's just not our target demo.
Right.
That ended up all getting itself resolved. But then there was just some back and forth on, you know, events and stuff over the years. But now it's weird. It's kind of on the other side of things because throughout all this, like the LA Brewers Guild publicly denounced our lawsuit and tried to take credit for the things that our lawyers accomplished through meetings that they had. And we actually ended up quitting the guild it was before that for some other related stuff. Basically, they were putting out messaging and telling us to do things that their leadership wasn't willing to do, like a do as I say, not as I do mentality. So it's been kind of really weird dealing with all the restrictions, like fighting all this stuff and kind of being on our own with it when you got your guild saying, don't do that, don't fight and make changes. It doesn't really make any sense.
I mean, were they saying like, don't fight because like... The only way I can make sense of that is if they had a plan going on behind the scenes that they didn't want anybody to know about, or they didn't want to say anything, or it's like we have back channel conversations that, you know, you could potentially overthrow or hurt. So don't do it. But also if they're asking you to do that, if that was the case, then they should tell you specifically why. But it doesn't sound like they were telling you why. They just said, don't do anything. Just go with the flow. Do whatever they say.
Yeah, that's kind of always the way we've been treated by them.
Okay.
It's actually the other two local breweries that run everything. So it's, I don't know, we need to sit in our corner kind of a thing. So we just went and did it on our own.
That doesn't feel good, man. I'm sorry that happened. That's weird. And I was reading a little bit on it and you had a clear reason because you could, like you said, you can go to Yard House or any other place and sit inside and have a beer, but you can't do that at your place. And you guys are suffering. You have bills to pay. You have people to pay. For God's sake, you're responsible for people's livelihoods, and you can't do this. Other people across town are doing the same thing that you're doing, essentially, but you can't for some reason. Was it an oversight? I mean, why would they exclude breweries? So breweries without kitchens couldn't serve because you had to have food.
It's having the distinguishing factor is having like a letter grade for yourself.
Okay,
and that was something that I think it was in. I get my years right. I think it was like 2011 or something. There was an exemption that was made for breweries where you didn't have to have them anymore. So it's supposed to be a privilege we have to be able to, if you don't have a kitchen, you don't need like all this extra oversight. And now that's being used against us. Mm-hmm. But like for us, just like a lot of other places though, we have food trucks like every night of the week. So there's always someone here serving food. So we're kind of meeting that requirement anyhow. So it doesn't make any sense that just because we have a different format for our kitchen that somehow anything's different health-wise.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you hear about like cities being a little bit hostile towards breweries, but I don't think the county would be, it has to be some sort of oversight, but you had to take legal action to figure it out.
And the county, Mudtoo Davis and stuff, like they've been a problem, and all four of the supervisors have been a problem too. It's really only like Catherine Barger has tried to have our back on stuff and has been outvoted on a lot of different things. So we have a good relationship with our supervisor's office. And a lot of times they're just like, we're doing all we can. We're getting overridden. Like tell your friends. Mm-hmm. So
would you mind giving me an example of something that she's been overridden on for trying to help you guys out?
For any of the things that the lawyers got changed, they didn't want me in the first place.
Same stuff. Okay, got it.
So I mean, anytime something happens, we've got good relationships, and that was kind of the case that was being made that somehow we're ruining relationships. And it's like, no, I still talk to those people. They agree with me.
How important is it? I mean, COVID aside and all this kind of stuff. How important is it to have a relationship with your supervisors and your local government? Have you had to reach out to them? Aside from all this current nonsense that we're dealing with?
Yeah. I mean, there's always something going on that I think having local government relationships and there's always something you need to talk to people about. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'll give you another way that it was like a year ago last summer where when there was like that brief, like the clouds had parted where we were like open for a month, that first summer of COVID.
Yeah.
And then they were cutting our power like that first Friday back. So I wasn't going to have power on a Friday night. So,
wow.
Supervisor's office actually made them give us a generator to keep our power going during prime time. And we actually got it for our neighbors too. So,
wow.
I feel like they really do try to have our back, but you know, when four other people are fighting against it, it's tough.
That's so weird to me. I mean, but I guess that's, you know, it sort of shows you like how even like on a national or worldwide, you know, level, how confusing politics can be. You can narrow it down to a local level and it's still just as fucking confusing. It's like, why would people vote against this? It doesn't make any sense in the name of, you know, safety. But if you can prove that other people are doing the same thing, then it doesn't, then it just, it shouldn't take a lawsuit and battling with an organization that's supposed to help you to get things changed around for you guys to have, you know, a business again.
Absolutely. Yeah. At the tail end of things too, it was very frustrating because they said that you could go to Staples Center for an event, but we couldn't even have like trivia on our phones at our tables. So it's like, how does that make any sense? So
yeah, it doesn't, but you got everything changed. Kudos to you guys. And actually I read an article about how basically attributing all of these changes in LA County to the lawsuit you filed and to the work you guys are doing, not to the Brewers Guild. So you got some press out of it, not out of it, but you got some acknowledgement out of it.
We don't really need acknowledgement. I'm not looking for that. We just want to keep doing what we're doing and be treated fairly.
I would need all the praise. I would hire a billboard. I would go in and just drop coasters at every place. That's what I would do, but I'm very petty like that. But I'm glad you guys got back up and running. Other than that, other than the drama, how have you guys been dealing with the pandemic as far as, you know, business losses or are you seeing an increase in your community coming out and sort of an outpouring of community outreach to support the business and to keep you guys around? How's that been for you?
Everyone really wants to get out and have something to do.
Yeah.
Right when things were able to open back up is when we started the venue. So it kind of has all happened at once with that, where I feel the downward trend in beer right now. I feel like it's not as exciting as it was for people with beer fests and everything as it was 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I think it's been good for us to try to differentiate ourselves with the events in the midst of that, because as us being able to do concerts makes us different as a brewery, as much as us having brewery makes us different than any other venue.
Yep.
So I don't know how everyone else is handling it exactly. You have to find a way to make yourself different to kind of stand out now, or just not be like everyone else. I guess this is what we're doing then.
Well, I mean, it sounds like that's
people differentiate.
It sounds like that's what you guys started doing in the first place, even pre-pandemic, is trying to differentiate and stand out and not do what other people are doing. And it's paying off. I mean, you know, other places that we've talked to are, you know, they have a different spin on their beers, or they're producing more beers different ways to help people, you know, go, oh, this is a new beer, I'm going to buy this and support the brewery. I'm going to do that and support the brewery. It's very much a community thing. I like having the venue too. It's basically another business that is open that is
absolutely
that people want to be a part of. Was that in planning before the pandemic, before the shutdown and everything?
Yeah, I think like 1 month into the pandemic is when we had our stage finally finished.
So it was going. At what point were you like, oh shit, this is not going to be good? You know, when like the lockdowns happen, like how does that moment happen?
You keep on thinking, well, next month is going to be different, and then it isn't for forever.
Yeah. Remember that? Do you guys remember? Here's another South Park reference. Remember when we thought everything would be good in a month? I think about that like once a month. I think about that. Like, man, there was a time when everyone was like, this will be fine. Let's not worry about it.
We tried to like find a use for our space though. There's one of our friends, Ruth, who works with like ACLU and Dolores Huerta Foundation. she does a lot of charity work around here. She's the kind of person that goes out into, like, finds where homeless people live out in the middle of nowhere and tries to bring them resources. So we actually kind of used our space here as storage for a lot of the things that she had, and just tried to be able to be a distribution point, or, you know, use our space for good while we couldn't use it for anything else.
Yeah, that's good. That's very kind. It's a very kind thing to do. All right, back to beer. I got That's the Ticket IPA, and it says it's 5.5%. Is that correct?
Yeah.
This is the only IPA I think I would ever drink, except for Celebration. Look how clear that goddamn thing is. Tell me about That's the Ticket, please, while I sip and smell.
So, I mean, I guess the name, first of all, is... we were trying to do a tie-in to the event space. So we have a deal, like, if you buy advance tickets at the bar, you get, like, half off that beer.
That's cool. I like that.
So the stars and the hops in this one, it's Strata and El Dorado. And on this version, I think we switched it from the first one. We're using, was it the Lallaman West Coast Yeast?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty simple otherwise. Let's see.
Don't tell me it's Pilsner malt and then yank that rug out from under me again.
No, it is this time for sure. It's okay. Pilsner malt. I mean, it's barely any more than that. It's like a half a bag of Vienna, half a bag of Dextra Pils, and some corn sugar. So it's pretty simple.
You're adding corn sugar, but it's still not even 6%.
Well, it's cheap gravity.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Because it is very, very light. I mean... It's I don't know. I'm going to try it again.
That's what we're drinking now too.
All right. What gives me pause is I'm trying to figure out how to describe this beer, which has always been my, you know, considering I've been doing this for a living for several years, you think I'd be better at it. But the hard part for me is describing IPAs, especially when it's an IPA that's sub, you know, 6%, but it doesn't taste like it. It's like you took... all, like an IPA, like a 7.5% IPA with all the flavors. You got all those hops. You got all that like orange citrus kind of thing. And you just shrink it. You just shrunk it to like 5.5. I don't know how else to describe it other than that. Because the malt is very light, but maybe it's the hops. The tie-in of like your brain between your brain and your mouth. When you come on a beer like this, where it's hoppy and bitter in a certain direction, makes me go, okay, well, this has got to be like, I don't know, at least 6.5%. Does that make sense? But it's not. And you have that malt in there that's very smooth and that Pilsner malt, and it's, you know, very elegant and it's not grainy or anything, but the bitterness doesn't taper off, if that makes sense. You get IPAs that are lower, you know, lower gravity IPAs, and there's something off with the balance. And I guess this is what I'm getting to. This doesn't have that because you guys have hopped it properly, and you have a lot of hops in the flavor. I would imagine because it's a very flavorful hops, like you said, it's the star, and the malt is just there to sort of carry it along. And I don't know, it's a very well constructed beer. It's very well constructed.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I don't know if any of that made any sort of sense, but to me it does. It's like you shrunk down an IPA, and sometimes we'll go like, oh, well, it's a session IPA. But even those can be sort of, they can sort of fall apart. You know, sometimes you need that alcohol to sort of carry it through, or you need a little bit more mouthfeel to battle with the hops, but your hop selection was good. The way you used it was great. And it just, you would never know that it was 5.5%. And this also proves my theory. You could make a delicious IPA and not have it be 8% or 7, you know, whatever. This is very tasty.
Some of it, I think some of it's how the dry hops work. I think that's made a big difference for us. Mm-hmm. So if we want to talk about like something I think is key in this, I like the double dry hop, but getting one in while it's still fermenting so it can work out, you know, that extra point or so or whatever. Mm. And then, you know, cool it down, like, I don't know, 50 or something like that, and then add more hops before you're done. That way those are just purely flavors. So we usually get like a hot dry hop and a cold dry hop, as it were.
Interesting. Okay.
That worked out well for us.
Okay. Wow. So you'll take it down to 50 and then dry hop at 50.
For the second one. I mean, we have to do the hop creep one earlier, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's cold as hell. Do you play around with those temperatures to like figure that out, or you just did it, tasted good? We're going to run.
We've done different, different recipes. It's been, a little warmer, a little cooler on some of them. We like to try stuff. I'd say one goal that I have when I'm making IPAs is just if we've got three other ones on the board, my main goal is how can I make it if you have a flight that one's way different. So sometimes I'll just do different stuff so it's not like whatever's there.
What would you change? Is it recipe stuff that you would change, or is it hop selection or just yeast. Hop selection?
The last time we made this yeast, I think we used S33. Which is technically a hazy yeast, but somehow I think that was the original goal when we made the first version of this beer was to use a hazy yeast to make it not hazy, because that's hilarious.
It ended up especially clear.
but then this time, then we switched it to like, well, let's actually use the West Coast ale yeast. So I don't know. I guess that's how we switch it. we set out for a goal, then we're like, okay, we achieved it. Now let's change.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool. It keeps it fresh. Which yeast do you prefer? For a beer like this, for your IPAs, what's a go-to, your preferred IPA yeast?
I'm going to say that my favorite is the Lallemand West Coast. I like that one the best, but they're all really good. Like, we switch between that and like S33 and US05 just for the most part. But I don't know. If I haven't used the weird yeast in a while, I might just order something for that one.
So it sounds like you guys are just still fucking homebrewers.
I'm sure we treat the way we approach beers way more like home brewers than pretty much any other brewery.
We're not doing pilot batches of anything.
Well, and to that end too, we try to maintain a connection to our home brewers too. Like this year we've done collabs with most of the clubs, like Ridgecrest Homebrewers came through, Yeast Ciders came through.
Mm-hmm. Crown of the Valley.
Sure.
Beavers coming through next month.
Beavers, sure. Yeah.
Recipe. So
shouts out to the Beavers.
We try to make sure that we brew with all of our homebrew friends, because there's a lot of good homebrewing talent out there. And that's where the creativity is coming from.
Well, and it's also you're at the point where you can give an experience to people who would really be fucking stoked on it. And that's kind of a cool place to be at as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
that means so much to us on the brewing end and on the stage and everything. Like people that want to be a part of this, that we can do that, that means the world to us.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. You got to give back, man. You can't forget the homebrew. And you know what I meant by it sounds like you guys are just fucking homebrewers. It's not like fucking homebrewers, but fucking homebrewing. You're still fucking doing it. You're still doing it, right? You're still thinking. Yeah, because, well, right. I mean, I've talked my fair amount of shit about homebrewers, but it's because I'm too lazy to do it anymore. But it is that mentality, I think, that sounds like that keeps things fresh for you guys. It keeps it fun in the brew house, especially, and it keeps coming up with stuff like this. I mean, you're just like, oh, I'm not going to worry about it. And I sort of like asking these questions because as a home brewer who hasn't, I've done like, collabs, but haven't brewed professionally as a career, it would seem like you just want to have fun with it and doing stuff on the fly like that. I'm just going to order this yeast. I haven't used it in a while. Let's see what happens. Let's do this. Let's do that. Keeps it fun. It's not a job. I'm not a job. It's not as much of a job anymore, I guess. For like, well, the sheet says this, so I got to do the, I don't know. I got to do the thing. You're like, fuck it. Do something else.
Yeah.
I like it.
Absolutely. That's exactly how we treat it.
Yeah, I like it. Do you have a flagship? One beer that rises amongst the others?
Now that you mention it, the very next one that I think's on your list is probably the one that we've brewed the most. That's El Mas Guapo.
El Mas Guapo, the IPA with guava. I feel weird saying guapo and guava. I can't do it.
And this actually started out as a homebrew collab. Our friend Juan Salcido from Beaver, Johnny Hops, he actually came up with this. And it's evolved over the years. There's been tweaks or whatever. You figure things out. But
yeah,
he's an amazing brewer. He was just here yesterday sharing awesome beer.
Nice, man.
And there's been some other things, like even our tamarind saison was his idea, and he came up with the idea for an imperial peach ale called Peaches Be Trippin', and he came up with that.
First of all, awesome name. I'm very surprised it hasn't been taken. A tamarind saison. That sounds very wintery. Sounds like a fall kind of a beer.
That's turned into a flagship for us too.
Really? Just,
I mean, we got taco trucks here like three nights a week. So yeah, it tends to work. Actually, I think that's our brewer's favorite beer right now.
Mm-hmm. You don't, I mean, look, I've been doing the show since 2005. And we've had our fair share of saisons, but I don't remember the last saison I've had in recent memory. It feels like you're doing a, and this is, again, this is what trips me out about craft beer is that, you know, it can, it's super regional and you can have styles that do really well in one part of town or in one brewery and then not in another brewery. And I like the fact that you have a saison that's doing so well that it's basically one of your like flagship beers. People ask for all the time. It's a saison. Nobody does that anymore. I just, I don't know. That trips me out. I think it's cool. And I think it also shows other breweries that there is space to sort of expand. Just because you have a flagship doesn't mean you can't make a fucking sweet potato beer. Anyway, El Mas Guapo with guava. How are you guys adding the guava to this? And then addendum or side note, whatever. Are you designing the hops around the guava? I know you said it was a homebrew recipe, but was that, how's that interplay?
In the very, very first original homebrew recipe, it was guava paste, and it just was unwieldy to do it that way. So we found a guava pulp product that we get. Mm-hmm. Ends up being in smaller packaging than we'd like, but somehow it costs more to get it in bulk.
Someone there's spreadsheet is off, and they need, you know what I mean?
So, we ended up putting that in, I guess, instead of the second dry hop, because we always do it cooler. The hops definitely go along with it. Sometimes supplies make us turn one way or another. Like, I think Citra was hard to get for a while, so we ended up going more mosaic heavy, and then that just kind of stuck. Like, this, I can get Citra now. It's no big deal, but, like, there's still some in it. But now it's mosaic's kind of the star. It's cool when things work out like that. Well, this version of it, it'll just be a little bit different. We'll see. And then everyone's like, this is the best version yet. I guess that's how it is now.
Yeah. I guess this is it. Do you listen to a lot of customer feedback? Are you one of those breweries where you're like, oh, if you guys like it, we'll just do it this way?
I mean, they tell us by like how much of it they buy.
we want to
make
that's
the best feedback you can get, honestly.
Yeah.
I guess we listen to our bartenders. Like our bartenders want to be able to answer the questions people are asking. So if they're not able to, or it's not turning out right, we want to be able to fix that. So we're answering the right questions for them.
Okay. All right. It's always interesting to find out how many people, cause I talked to a brewery, I forget the name. They would have like monthly, you know, meetings with, you know, some customers, or they would go out and actively like talk about it. And I don't hear that too much. But I don't know if it's also, you know, needed to a certain extent. It just depends on whatever works for your, you know, your setup. But it sounds like, I mean, you know, you're changing things up enough to keep people on their toes. So fuck it. You're doing something right. Do you know what hops are in this off the top of your head? You don't need to.
Yeah. What is it? I think it's Bitter with Centennial, Summit, Citra, Mosaic, and Atenum.
Atenum. I don't know too much about that hop. It seems, sounds kind of new.
It's
relatively newish.
Cascade-ish.
Okay. All right. Yeah, man, that the aroma is great because it has a, like, I have to sort of search for the guava, and I'm okay with doing that because it, like, looking deeper for more of the guava, the hops and the guava sort of blend together. You know, sometimes you can get like I guess it's more with mangoes really, where you can get sort of like the green mango and then like the really dark mango flavor. I only have experience with guava puree for making cocktail syrups, but it has that sort of darker fruit flavor. And then some of the hops that I'm getting have some earthiness, and it sort of, it, those blend well with the lighter side of the guava flavors, if that's making any kind of sense at all. So it is sort of this nebulous, ever-changing aromatic. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a great beer. It's 7.5%. Jiminy Christmas. That's why it's so popular.
Well, as I'm sitting here, we have that in the venue space right now. I'm just like, ah, oh, that's, That's a problem. That should be in the other room.
Do you segment out the beers? Is not everything available in the brewery that's available in the venue space?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, currently we just have a four-tap kegerator in here. We got approved to put a bar and bathrooms and a spiral staircase and everything in here in July, but engineering's just been a holdup and everyone asking for questions. I think last I heard, someone at the city thought we were building a new building. And it's like, no, it's an existing building. We're putting a room in it.
It already gets mail here.
So hopefully soon we'll have that there and have more taps.
Yeah. Well, and you would think the city would know what you're doing, but
yeah, they have the plans on file. So
so they could just look it up. But look,
I'll
just do it for you. I'll build a spiral staircase. Never done it, but I could do it, I'm sure. Go on YouTube. Take a class on doing anything. Yeah, that's a cool beer, man. I like that. I like that beer a lot. And this is a year round beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Probably like a sixth of our total production ever.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Like one of our most popular.
That's huge. Oh, God bless homebrewers, man. All right. I'm going to take one final break. It's not normally what we do, but I'm taking a third break. I'm going to get the two bottles I have in the fridge. I'm going to come back. We'll drink those. We'll wrap up. You guys cool?
Cool.
Sounds great.
All right. Hang on, everybody. It's the session. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented. It's the session.
We are hanging out with Matt and Sarah from Transplants Brewing in Palmdale, California. And I have two bottles of beer, and I'm very excited about them because they are kind of kicks ass. I have Faith Healer or Macaroon Tycoon, which is first.
Macaroon first.
All right. So you were saying at the break, Matt, that someone tried to flush a belt buckle down the toilet. At the brewery. Yes. That's cool, dude.
Can't make this up. Went to get beer earlier, and it's like, oh, there's a flood. I'm going to hide over here. Now I go over there now to get a bottle, and it's like, it was a belt buckle.
It usually, weird things like that happen on Mondays when, like, barely anybody's around.
Of course. Mondays are my belt buckle flush. Did you get the belt buckle out, or did it go down?
I didn't follow up on that. That is a very important detail. I think they got it.
It is an important deal because if you got it out, I would put that on the wall personally. I would put a plaque underneath it. I would mount it. Like, that's just the weirdest, unless that's not the weirdest thing that people have tried to flush.
No. Like, one time somebody, like, flushed an iPhone and I was just like, the toilet was clogged and I'm doing the thing and I'm just like, what the
fuck? That's such a weird, like, thing to flush. Also, it's a weird thing to clog the toilet with too.
Yeah, I mean, and it was one of the smaller older ones, so it just fit perfectly.
Oh yeah, back when like the small phones were cool, and now we're back to the big phones. As long as there's a screen on it, we're good.
No. You got to see. This is Sarah's phone. It's
the foldable one.
Yes.
Oh. It's a tablet.
I got to fold.
How do you like it?
That would not flush.
No, that wouldn't flush.
No. It's like the will it blend guy. Like, no, will it flush? I don't know. Let's try that. Here's a label for Macaroon Tycoon, which is a chocolate coconut macaroon imperial stout. You guys tell me a little bit about this. Is a big fans of Great British Bake Off here? What's going on? Which I love that show, by the way. So there's no shade on that.
Brandon's inspiration for that. He's basically trying to do a version of what is it, Uncle Pennybags? The Monopoly guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Money Bag?
Maybe Uncle Money Bag.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'm fucking it up. I should know this better.
They won't see you this way.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like the Monopoly guy, and he's holding a bag of macaroons.
Nice. Why macaroons? Like, what's the inspiration? My brain is I'm having trouble working now. What's the inspiration for brewing with macaroons? Chocolate coconut macaroon imperial stout. How did those flavor combinations come about?
Well, we just wanted to make something that was chocolate and coconut and trying to have a theme to it. Obviously based on the French, like that kind of macaron or whatever it is. Yeah. It's like the, you know, coconut cluster thing. Mm-hmm. They dip like a little bit of chocolate and done. That's kind of what we wanted to taste like. I used like toasted coconut in it and chocolate. So There you have it.
Yeah, I had a hard time figuring that out. Macaroon versus macaron. The macaron is like the French sandwich with like the meringue.
Yeah.
And the macaroon, which the best macaroon is at Disneyland at the Jolly Holiday Bakery, the Matterhorn macaroon. I'm just going to say that to anybody who wants to fight me on that. Yeah, it's delicious. That's really very good. It needs to warm up a little bit. It's been in the fridge all day.
It's got all the age on it too. This is actually our 5th anniversary beer. So.
Oh, so when is your anniversary? Give me a little date on that.
January 15th.
Okay, so we're almost a year old on this. Oh, wow. Yeah. January 15th. Nice. You guys doing a big party for that?
Yes.
Will the county let you?
Yeah. Six beers, 6 seltzers, 6 bands. Got to do the 6th theme.
No way. That's tight. I love it. Who's playing?
Headlining that one is Life for a Life, which is like a hardcore punk band that hasn't played in a while.
It sounds like a hardcore band. I feel like you didn't have to explain it. It just very much does.
And let me make sure I get this right. And it's also Harsh Reality, and Insanity, who's been here before, Heartthrob, All Eyes, and Triste. So it's like all 6 right. band, like hardcore show.
Nice.
And it's people I know who are going to really bring the thunder for it. So it's going to be a fun one.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Yeah, you better take that 7.5% off. Although I think a lot of hardcore people are like straight edge, aren't they? Maybe not. I don't know. That scene I never really got super into. The music is cool, but aren't a lot of hardcore like straight edge guys?
Well, I'd say this. Everyone takes their art really seriously. So like all these guys, from what I've seen, everyone's goal is they want to make sure they have a good performance. Yeah. So everyone's taking it pretty easy until they're off stage.
Fair.
So I mean, and I think everyone's pretty, for the most part, that everyone's drinking after that. But
okay. I know what you're saying. Fair. That's fair. Yeah, it's interesting, man, how many people think that, like, you know, artists are just dumb luck or aren't good at business or, you know, whatever. They're just having fun doing the thing. And I think maybe that translates a little bit to craft beer. My buddy is in the music industry. You know, he always used to say, you know, everyone thinks that like rappers, for example, they're just writing down rhymes and it's just sort of dumb luck or whatever. But like some of these people are like the smartest business people because they know exactly how to get the best performance out to like push the brand or whatever. Yeah, which is things aren't always what they seem, which is, I think, is a lot of craft beer too, in a certain extent. Like you don't really know how the passion kind of comes through, but the business acumen that you have to survive a thing like COVID, to survive a low sales month, or to know when to expand and when to do this and when to contract a little bit. I mean, did you guys take any business classes at all to sort of prepare you for this? Sarah's laughing.
No, I mean,
no.
In that regard, like our other business partner, Corey, he's our CFO and runs the books here, and he does a fantastic job. So we really appreciate the strength that he brings to the table. I'm much better with the creative and stuff like that, or just, you know, figuring out what the next thing to do is. But being grounded is very important, and having that voice to, you know, bring you back to earth sometimes.
Yeah.
Math isn't for everyone, dude. I hate it. I don't want to deal with math. I would much rather be on the creative side of things. Absolutely. Well, I've been warming this beer up for a little bit in my glass, and it's very good. It's very, very smooth. How old was this when it went in the bottle? A couple of weeks. Did it get any tank aging?
Probably like 3 weeks.
Okay.
Probably a little more than that.
Probably 3 or 4 weeks in the tank.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit longer than normal because it's so big. But
yeah. Was it for a certain time? Like, did you just bottle it and then sell it? Or were you aging it in the library, in the cellar for a little bit? Am I making sense?
I hoard things. I mean, that was our anniversary release, but like, I have bottles and kegs in the cooler that I just store for days. And I think I need to go address it now because everything on my, like the, our special like barrel age list all just fell off. And it's like, well,
now
let's,
it's colder. They're drinking it.
Let's go see what else I got. I got reserves. I just got to go in there and sift through and pick some new things. But I try to be a good collector.
I think that's cool.
We're barrel aging some of it though.
Oh yeah. That is right. It's got to be ready pretty soon. Then,
yeah. Right? Yeah. So, I guess we better check that.
But we have this in barrels. It doesn't have the coconut. So we were going to add the coconut at the end. Yeah. So it's fresh, but there'll be a barrel aged version of this Yes, sometime next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look that up.
I apologize. You did tell me it was your anniversary, Brian. I slipped my mind, but I don't know, man. I think that's part of the cool part about being a brewer and owning a brewery is to have that cellar, to hoard all that shit, and then you pull it out later. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that sort of speaks to home brewing roots a little bit. I like bringing it back there a little bit. As a home brewer, I used to do that all the time. I still have like my first 8 bottles of beer that I ever brewed for no reason because you hoard that kind of shit.
That feeds that obsessive collective personality type that I have. Like, I don't know. You ever had a collection of comic books or whatever?
Sure, it's
Yeah, it's like that. It's like, good, I got all the things.
Yeah. My collection was ex-girlfriend. No, I'm kidding. Definitely, man, for sure. For sure. And then with beer, it's different, man, because like I have that need, but then I also have like a value subset where it's like, am I going to be able to sell this or make money on it or whatever? And so that sort of overrides a lot of my collecting, demons, like the Star Wars toys or whatever the fuck it is, right? So I tend to like be ground myself a little bit on buying dumb shit. But I still have a lot of dumb shit to collect too. So I would much rather prefer collecting beer. Chocolate coconut macaroon imperial stout. Yeah, that's good. That is very smooth. I realize I didn't really describe it too much. Is there a real chocolate in there?
Yes.
Where do you add that?
After fermentation, pretty much anything that's a flavor of any kind, like be it coconut or whatever, it's after.
You're doing an after. Okay.
So it's flaked coconut and it's like a chocolate extract.
It's a chocolate extract that I use that's from a baking company, and it's just like distilled down chocolate, basically. It's not fake or anything. It's a flavor.
Actually, I thought of a funny thing about that. We actually asked them once, we're like, hey, do you sell to other breweries? Is this what's in Southern Tier chocolate? And they're like, we can neither confirm nor deny. Like, it tastes a lot like it to me.
Yeah.
That's really good. I would never have known. It almost tastes like a nib kind of thing too, but I think that's just the strength of the beer. Yeah, and that chocolate aroma is rad. God, I'd make brownies with this or some shit. That smells great. That's awesome. All right. This last beer.
The little cupcake shop did that. Remember Nadia's? They made cupcakes with it.
Oh, really?
One time.
Wow. See, I'm a genius, but Nadia's got there ahead of me. Talk to her later. This last one is called Faith Healer, and it's Imperial Stout aged in Koval whiskey barrels. Let's give a shot of that label. Love it. Very cool. Koval Whiskey, is that a local whiskey producer?
No, they're out of Chicago.
Okay.
Since we're Chicago natives, like...
There you go.
I reached out to them. They live pretty close to one of our friends in downtown Chicago. And they were really receptive to, like, freighting me some barrels. So we've kept up that relationship as their popularity is, like, grown. So they sell them to me, like... when they might not to somebody else, because we have a kind of... A
there you go. You got to do it.
But yeah.
Leverage anything you can. Ooh, wow, that smells awesome. I need to let it just sort of like open up a little bit. Tell me a little bit about this beer, Faith Healer.
You want to?
Just basically trying to do a huge Imperial Stout.
It was kind of Corey's...
This is our CFO Corey's idea. He wanted to do this. I guess it was supposed to kind of be our version of Black Tuesday. So kind of
is
just trying to do
the brewery.
The brewery, just like a big old like, or also like Bourbon County. So like either Black Tuesday or Bourbon County,
but like, not the current versions.
Well, you can't get Bourbon County anymore because it's, I'm not participating in that. Forget that. We gave them up years ago when everyone else should have too. So we got to make our own. Actually, I think you'd say it's more Bourbon County than Black Tuesday, actually.
Yeah, because we have some variants that we do of it too. Mm. Like we did a coffee one. We've done a cherry one. We've done a vanilla one. And then we did a toasted pecan one, right?
Ooh, yeah. That sounds delicious.
I just remember.
Was it good? How did that come out?
Yeah, really good.
Toasted pecan sounds great.
Kind of like added a maple-y kind of thing because pecans kind of just are like that.
Wow, this aroma is insane. It keeps changing on me. Like I get like if you smell like a bag of cacao nibs where it's that sort of brighter, maybe like acidic aroma, I'm getting that a lot. But then it kind of shifts to like straight up like fresh tobacco leather. Not tobacco leather, but tobacco and leather. Like pipe tobacco, like right from the tobacconist, just bam. Yeah, wow. That is a trip. A little smoky in the aroma. Coffee, like a very high cacao, high percentage chocolate bar. Yeah, it smells like I used to be, you know, think I was cool and smoked a pipe for a long time, not a long time, but every once in a while. And like it smells like walking into the pipe tobacco shop. Wow, what an amazing smelling beer. Let's give it a taste. What's the ABV on this? I can't read it at this point in the night.
I believe
it's 13.
Mm-hmm.
Are we right?
Yeah.
Good, I guess right. I know my own beers.
Wow, that's intense. Hopefully this isn't an insult. It tastes like a sweet tobacco thing. You get a lot of sweetness, but there's a smoky tobacco kind of essence that I find really appealing.
I think a lot of that's from the barrel.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, or at least that aspect of it. But you get the chocolatiness. I mean, that's from the beer, obviously. But like, I think some of the tobacco notes are from the oak and what the whiskey did.
I mean, those have to be in insane barrels. How's that? How do you taste the whiskey along with the beer to see like what picks up and what flavor aspects picked up?
We've gotten them separately. We're big fans of them too. So yeah, like we've even got some of the special barrels and I try to get all those too. Mm. So we've got, as you get more and more into beer, we're around beer all the time. So what do? You go home and drink whiskey.
Yeah. That's true, man. Yeah. It almost, it's almost getting like a really high quality, it's just stupid. A really high quality hot chocolate mix. I don't know. Just flavor profiles, man. You got to put words to them at some point. But like powdered hot chocolate. I don't know what that is. Maybe you can say a little like sweetness from the marshmallow kind of aspect. That's probably from the barrels as well. Yeah, that aroma is
char.
Is awesome. That is a very, very great aroma. The beer is smooth, but there's still some heat to it. But it's not offensive. Like, it's a little warming in the chest here, which I think is what you want from an Imperial Stout, especially when it's been aged in whiskey barrels. You want to feel some of that.
I was just looking at the grain bill and remembering how hard it was to get the alcohol up that much. So, geez, like, I packed that thing out with, like, a bunch of DME, which is always like, I'm gonna have to boil over.
Yeah.
And there's some dextrose in there as well, just because I think I was trying to find a way to get points. And there's malt gems, which is the...
What the fuck are malt gems? Now you're making things up, dude.
No, I think Great Western makes them, but they're like, you don't have to mill them. It's like a way to stuff more grain into your mash tun without having... It takes up less space. So there's a bunch of bags of that. Basically, I was trying to pack it out and get that many gravity points.
Like like malt nuggets?
It's...
I mean, I can look at
that. I don't know. We poured in like a... You're it's like, almost like the flaked barley. There's flaked barley and flaked oats in here too. And it's kind of like that, but it's not like flakes. It's...
I'll look it up. I don't want to put you on the spot to like shill, you know, some...
That's something we use all the time.
Yeah. I've never heard of it. Not much surprises me anymore. Because I'm extremely online, but I've never heard that in my entire life. Malt gems. I'll check it out.
Yeah, we just used them a few times.
Okay. All right. It worked, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess it's Brees. Brees has them.
Yeah. It smells like a very high quality chocolate with alcohol. All across the spectrum, like your beers have been just very aromatic, very descriptively aromatic, if that makes sense. There's a lot of the essence of the beer in the aromas. It's not just like a one note, like, oh, it's just orange. It's very rounded.
Yeah, we try to avoid using things that are like that. Like, not to throw them under the bus, but like Amoretti stuff always screams that to me, like these one note things that.
Every brewery's got that sample pack. They just like send it to you.
Yeah.
By the way, I just looked up what Malgems are just to be sure, but it's custom milled Synergy Select Pilsen from Breese that has the majority of the husk removed so you can fit more.
Yeah, it kind of looks okay. Like grape nuts almost.
Okay. So they're doing to grain what they did to hops, I guess. Hop pellets.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of get the, okay. Interesting, man. You got to love innovation like that. All right, guys. Well, I think we'll let you go, but where can people go to learn more about Transplants Brewing?
Transplantsbrewing.com or on Instagram, it's Transplants Brewing or Transplants Venue.
Okay. I love it. Matt, Sarah, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you for sending all the beers. They were all great. I love them all. And I think I'm actually going to finish Crowler of IPA for the first time in my entire life.
Thanks so much for having us. Please come see us and have a beer and see a show sometime.
Definitely. Absolutely. I definitely will. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I really appreciate it. And until next time, we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.